We're joined by Bud Bailey.
Hi, Jay. Nice to be back here.
Yes, back on Public Radio.
Even though I didn't work in this building,
right,
for a couple brief things.
Well, you had to go through the I never did get to North Street, but I, from what I heard of all those people who endured there for many years, I guess I have to give you a thank you for that.
My pleasure, I guess.
Yeah, let's get right into then your resume. And starting with that, WEBR. You were on the WEBR sports staff. I recall listening to you when I was in college.
A small boy, I know.
Just a small boy in college. I was there when I was eight. What about that? What years were you at WEBR?
I started in 1978 as an intern under Pete Weber. And Pete left, and I wound up being essentially a writer of sportscast and covered some events and did a few sportscasts on the air, but I was mostly a reporter doing things and hosted a talk show for a few years. And I stayed there through 1986 when I left to go to the Sabres Public Relations Department.
Okay, Sabres Public Relations Department. You stayed there for a while.
Six years.
And let's not forget the highlight, which, of course, is naming Sabretooth.
Naming Sabretooth should be in the first paragraph of my obituary. The Knoxes had mascot envy because of Buster Bison, and I was part of a mid-management committee. He said, "We want a mascot." I said, "Guys, it has got to be a saber-tooth tiger, and it's got to be called Sabretooth, S-A-B-R-E." And everybody said, "Yeah, you're right." And so, cute little thing, a lot cuter than Buster Bison, I'd like to think.
Definitely cuter, and not necessarily outlived Buster, but I think
maybe outshining, more well-known because it is Major League.
It is Major League. Man, Buster Bison's not quite on the same level anymore. No offense, Buster. I appreciate that. So, and then this is interesting, though. So you go from working for the Sabres PR team to covering the Sabres.
To covering the team for the Buffalo News, which I did from 1994 to 2001. And then went inside and did editing and that sort of job, and did some other reporting for a while with the news. Started covering the Bandits, for example, in 2009, and then in 2015, when the purge of editors was starting, they needed a body for high school. So I did 2015 to 2017 as one of the high school guys for the most part. Still did the Bandits, still did some editing when needed, but that changed, and then I retired from the news in 2017.
Okay, so it's been a couple of years since you were at the Buffalo News, and I definitely want to get into that just a little bit. But what was it like, though, to switch from working for the Sabres to covering the Sabres?
I'm fond of saying, Jay, that everyone should get to cover a team that fires you. But I did know the game a bit and knew how things worked, so it was probably helpful. The toughest part of the transition is just the day-to-day operations of how to cover a team, and that took a little getting used to, and trying to develop some sources on the current team, which I didn't really know that many people. I wasn't that close to the players when I worked in public relations. I more or less sit in the office and came up with statistics and ran the press box and that sort of thing. So I didn't have that much contact. So it was a little different seeing them on a day-to-day basis and learning how to travel with a team, which is a big adjustment because it's an awful lot of travel, even if it's easier because you're traveling with the team literally on team planes. But just being around and the lifestyle, and I had only gotten married in 1992, so it was quite a dash of cold water thrown on me and what that can do to your life, because it's a considerable adjustment. You see why the divorce rate is so high among journalists, because you're just so dedicated to the job. It's such a consuming occupation that other things can get in the way. That did not happen to me, fortunately.
Right.
We're still happily married all these years later.
I didn't write down the time frame, but so you were covering the team when they went to the Stanley Cup Finals?
Yes, in 99. Bucky Gleason and I were splitting it at that point, and I was in the – after Brett Hull's goal, I was just so happy that someone had scored, because it was quarter two in the morning. I got in the elevator and said, after a year of crease violations. I said, they'll probably decide now that somebody was in the crease and it's no goal. And we got there, and it was just chaos on the first floor where the dressing rooms were arguing about the play. And it was just like walking into a hurricane. It was an amazing situation. The Dallas room was just wall-to-wall people, and the Sabres, which I stuck to, were just shaking their heads, why aren't we still playing? It was a pretty memorable moment, even if it's at 2 in the morning.
Right. So, and just if you could then recount that scene. Just, are you saying in the hallway there's arguments going on?
No, it was just the players. They came off the ice wondering what was going on, why it wasn't reviewed, and then they got in the locker room. By the time we got in there, there had been a little cooling down, but all of them were saying, like, you know, how could they let that play that stand? It's been called all year.
Right.
And even now, in fact, I just posted a interview with Rhett Warner, who was hurt in Game 6. He had broken his ankle in Game 5, which was kind of a what-if of that whole series because he was playing well. But he said, yeah, I was on crutches and saw the play. And he goes, I'm still waiting for an apology, and a lot of other guys are too.
Wow. And that also brings up another point. I mean, though we just talked about your Buffalo News time, you're still actively working these days, although you are, quote-unquote, retired.
Right. I literally received a job offer 2 days after I handed in my notice at the news from Buffalo Sports Page. Paul Peck and Kevin Sylvester were starting up a website of local events, and I said, you know, the pay will be crummy, but you can go to games, and we'd like to use your experience, and you can write anything you want, which was pretty ideal in that circumstances. And I've been doing it for these past 2.5 years now. The Athletic came in and kind of took away some of the newness of that idea to have a local website, because The Athletic does a lot of things locally, not maybe as wide a net as, and Buffalo Sports Page has suffered, but it's still fun to go to games, and as I tell people, I'd like to think I see more games in Buffalo than anybody else in town, because every so often I'll go see UB basketball or Canisius hockey or Niagara Sports, or I work for the Bisons as their pitch clock timer for about a third of the games. We've got 3 guys that alternate on it. So I see a lot of games, and it's not a bad retirement gig.
Right.
It just doesn't pay that much, but that's okay.
That's okay. So what would we see if we checked you out on Buffalo Sports Page?
Well, last week when my wife was out of town, I wrote 6 straight columns on games, everything from UB basketball to Canisius hockey to 3 Sabres games to a Bandits game, whatever it was and is in a given week. But I try to give a different perspective than you get anywhere else. And that perspective is something like the view from 30,000 feet, the view from the 300 level, whatever you want to call it. Just I try to do big pictures and try to provide some sort of angle that nobody else is providing. Like, for example, when the Sabres just finished up their homestand, I broke down that 3-goal explosion that really changed that game around. And said, well, they're 5-4-1 in this 10-game stretch that we thought was so crucial. They didn't kill their chances, and by winning their last 3 games, they salvaged something, and there's still a little hope. But it's not like 7-2-1 that might have been a season-changing stretch. And sometimes that is necessary. It might be even more necessary when you go to the Canisius basketball or hockey or Niagara basketball, hockey or UB sports, where it's not covered as well. I went down to St. Bonaventure a couple weeks ago for a basketball game, and doesn't get much coverage in Buffalo for obvious reasons. And just to say, well, these guys lost to Canisius and Siena back in November, and here they are third in the Atlantic 10. And obviously Mark Schmidt is doing maybe his best ever coaching job. I think it's nice to have that sort of second opinion on what's going on and just try to put the big picture in perspective. I think sometimes we lose that in covering the minutiae.
And that gets us kind of into the broad topic that I wanted to get into here, and that is sports journalism. There, you know, it's interesting how you mentioned St. Bonaventure, nobody really covering it. I'm at a lot of the Canisius games, and I look to my left and to my right at Press Row, and frequently there's nobody there now. Whereas when the Buffalo News was a little more active, there was always somebody there from the Buffalo News.
I was there for WEBR constantly in the 80s.
Right. You know, and just go on and on and on. And sometimes there's nobody there yet. You know, social media is full of information. What about that? How do you see the current state of coverage when it comes to sports as compared to what, let's say, it was just 10 years ago?
Well, I could probably do an hour on the whole subject. Clearly, the sports media has always evolved. It popped up more than 100 years ago with the rise of leisure time. Sports started to get popular. Baseball stadiums started to grow in size. Radio came along in the 20s to do play-by-play, which certainly increased interest. Television changed everything in the 50s because now we could start watching the events. That, in turn, changed how newspapers had to cover sports because many fans could see the games for the first time. They know what happened, so newspapers had to shift from telling them what happened to why it happened. That made interviews in the locker rooms that much more important, questioning managers about strategy and so forth. So the coverage changed. Over the last 10, 20 years, clearly radio has declined as a news outlet. Thank you so much for WBFO for breaking that trend. if you try to get local news in this town on radio, there's really very, very little of it as they've concentrated on different formats and not felt an obligation to provide news as a public service, which is kind of sad when you get around to it.
Absolutely.
But now, in the last 10 years, say, the computer has changed everything and their phones. And maybe the biggest change is how newspapers are choosing what to cover. And I know this firsthand. No longer can you look at attendance as a guide to public interest. And I always point to the Buffalo Bandits as an example. They're averaging probably 14,000, 15,000 fans per game over the last few years. And they used to sell the place out. Sellouts are less common now than they used to be. It only happens once every couple of years. But still, by any standards, I mean, they draw more fans in one game than UB basketball draws in three, and maybe what Canisius might draw in six or seven, perhaps because of seating capacities. Right now, I'm the only reporter that covers games.
And that's for Buffalo Sports Page.
Yeah, and the Buffalo News waited till the playoffs last year to cover anything. No longer is the 15,000 fans a game or whatever the number is the key thing. It's how many clicks they get on stories on the internet, and that's their judgment. Now, that's a battle the Bandits are never going to win, but what we've seen is the Bills and Sabres are the obvious big draws, and the news has chosen to dedicate a great many of its resources in that direction. So not only do you have five guys covering a game on game days, you have a Bills story virtually every single day of the year. Picked up the paper and on the head of the sports section above the fold, as we say, is a story on Deion Dawkins. Will he resign? And it's February, and that's one of the big stories of the day that, you know, that's supposed to jump out at me. It's only have a month to discuss that, but they know that's what gets people to click their phones and read it online. And you get more facts. The coverage of minutia is staggering. I look on my Twitter feed every morning, and it's breaking news, quote unquote, that the Sabres have changed one of their lines around because of an injury. And it's like, well, the lines last about 20 minutes,
right. If that,
and it's like, why are we bothering to worry about that? But because you have to feed the machine. Now, that phone aspect and the computer aspect has also changed the deadline business completely, because the deadline is the second you hear it. So we have the sight of people doing interviews now, newspaper interviews, in the locker room, and then everyone walks out to hear the Sabres coach say in a different room, and some of the newspaper guys will be punching in quotes to Twitter to get it out that instant.
Mm.
Amy Moritz will tell you the story about how she knew it was time to go when she went to a movie once and she was working on a Sabres story and she needed a quote. So she brought her laptop to the movie theater and checked her email every 5 minutes. And when a quote finally came from the Sabres, she went in and inserted it into her story. In the old days, when things were easier, we had deadlines at like 10 and midnight or whatever the times were at a particular era. Now the deadline is how soon can you type it up? And there's obviously accuracy problems. The faster you work, you're going to have those problems. And without editors, you know, things go unchecked. And it's a very difficult situation. And the pressure on the reporters has become absolutely enormous.
I guess then the question, there's a lot of questions that follow.
There are. That,
but the one, as you just said that, was it fun being a beat reporter?
At times. The usual one-liner about the business is, they pay me to cover practices, I'd go to the games for free. Granted, the public doesn't see the fact that these guys went to a morning practice at 10 a.m. to see the skate, interviewed people, go back to their houses, write a notebook, come in for the game at 6, and they're working past midnight. I remember doing some Bison's days where I was up till 1:30 in the morning, and it started at 9:30, and I used to say, where's the glamour in this job?
Right.
It's fun to tell people about the events that they enjoy and hopefully add to their enjoyment. Absolutely. And it's fun to be around. It's less fun to go to the police department and work on the blotter.
Sure.
You're dealing with an event that's a release for people from their daily grind, and they enjoy it, and the games themselves are always fun. What's good about my situation now at Buffalo Sports Page is I have the fun of the games, but not not the other responsibilities.
Right. So I get from the outside looking in, as I heard you describing it, I could say I don't think I'd want to take on that type of responsibility now. Does it look like these – and I'm sure we're talking about colleagues of yours and peers that you've met throughout the years. Are they having fun doing it like they used to?
Certainly less fun than they used to.
Yeah.
And for example, I used to travel with the Sabres on the team charter. They cut that out, which frankly I figured they would at some point, because you just don't want somebody from the – I hate to use the word opposition, but you get the idea – there to record things. I saw Dominic Hasek lose a card game and flip a plate of spaghetti onto Jason Daw's lap, and suddenly I see Daw and he's wiping off with a napkin his suit coat and good shirt and tie, and what happened? It's like Dominic lost a hand, and they don't really want the media to have access of that. It's
right.
Become a much more of an us versus them situation.
There was a separation, an understanding perhaps of what.
Yeah,
what,
things on the plane were said to be off limits, and that was generally easy to follow. But
right.
You're still there,
right?
And you really have to earn trust in that situation. And even so, there were always some people in the organization that wouldn't completely trust you, and I think that's fair and natural.
Sure.
So as a result, the guys covering the teams now are getting up at 6 in the morning after a game to catch a flight to the next city. We did a road trip with the Sabres once that went Vancouver, Los Angeles, San Jose, Anaheim, Arizona, Long Island.
Ooh.
In January. Tough trip to pack for. And trying to follow them on commercial flights has got to be awful in this day and age.
Ooh.
With so many flights going back and forth, and you got to get just to catch up with the team. They just fly directly nonstop everywhere. But to do that commercial is an awful burden, and you're still writing as you go.
Right. Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. Back to then going, from the way things have changed, and you were talking about how the Buffalo News is about clicks now. It's not about attendance. Attendance isn't telling us where to go. And all of these, this hyper-focus on the Sabres and the Bills. What's been lost? What are we losing? What are we losing from previous times as consumers, as sports fans? What have we lost something?
We have lost the other sports to a certain degree. We have lost coverage on a daily basis of Canisius, Niagara, UB, St. Bonaventure. And UB football gets covered fairly well by the news, but we've clearly the colleges have had to adapt, and they have their own cameras. Games are on TV now, and they bring cameras for post-game interviews and post the interviews with a PR director. But clearly they can't do as thorough and as an objective a job as they used to. The second part of that is even the lower levels. There's 120 high schools in the Western New York coverage area of the Buffalo News. Miguel Rodriguez is the only guy covering them full-time. I used to help him out, and we were overworked. I can't imagine it's like going from two guys to one person. It's extremely difficult. And the little sports that occasionally would get coverage are really suffer like that. There's an audience for that thing. There's an audience for the Bandits fans and auto racing and go on down the line, but they obviously suffer. And it's funny. When I post a story on Buffalo Sports page, I do see a counter for retweets by people. And my typical Sabres story might get 5 to 10 retweets, depending on what I happen to write, if I hit a nerve or whatever, if somebody sees that that's popular and retweets it. I did an interview with the new owner of Lancaster Speedway last summer, which was pretty innocent. It's just he didn't have that much to say except, yeah, we're hoping to restore racing in Lancaster, and we've got a great tradition and so forth. That got 750 retweets. There's a whole auto racing community that's very rabid that cares, and Lariat's been writing about them for years, but it's always gotten ignored. Running, I used to write a column every 2 weeks. Amy Moritz now has to justify one column a month as a freelancer. A lot of those things have their own rabid audiences, but they become even smaller niches, and their either coverage is scaled down or ignored.
What about the idea of, we'll just use the Buffalo News. The Buffalo News, reviled by some members of the sports
monopolies
community,
are never popular.
Never popular. At the same time, though, there is, for lack of a better term, a credibility source there. That they are, you know, what they say means something.
There's no question that the Buffalo News sets the agenda in this town. I'd remember writing stories that would appear in the morning and then go to a practice, and the other media outlets, like TV cameras, would ask about the subject that I raised. That happened an awful lot.
Right.
And there's no one that has replaced that status in this town. So the news is still clearly number one in driving it. And, of course, the TV stations have cut out everything but local these days because they've gotten so little time, but they basically can only deal with the Bills and Sabres and maybe the odd college basketball highlight. They've only got 3 minutes of sportscast now because sports audience isn't great. The national audience has started to go to ESPN when it was formed in the late 70s, and they just couldn't compete with that. So it's TV, talk about TV media coverage has also evolved in that time, but they just basically covered the big teams and move on.
Well, what about the idea that the Buffalo News, going from what it was, and I know we could probably be talking about any other paper in any other reasonably sized market in the country, so I don't want to necessarily, in that regard, single out the Buffalo News as being some sort of criticism. But going from where it was, let's say, again, 10 years ago, where you're covering the Bandits and you're, you know, there's people covering Canisius and St. Bonaventure and UB, to now this click-driven publication, are they losing, like you said, they still drive things, but are they losing their authority? Are they losing that they are the authority word on sports and sports journalism?
Certainly in some areas. They still do a great job on the Bills and Sabres in many ways. I believe the news just won an award for its 50th anniversary section on the Sabres from the Associated Press contest. Which is funny because the news dropped the Associated Press a few years ago. Be that as it may, they still do that well, and they still drive it, even without regular columnists, which is interesting because, like so many people, I grew up with Larry Felser as the columnist. You know, I'd always make sure to read him, and then Jerry Sullivan took his place. And it's funny to read a sports section without those loud voices that you said, okay, I watched the game. Now I want to read what blank has to say about the game, what Jim Kelly has to say about the hockey game, because Jim knows so much. He's going to put this in perspective and increase my understanding of the situation and add to my enjoyment of the game. They've lost that lately because they don't have the regular columnists who fill that role.
Do you see that type of voice coming back?
Boy, I think it's missed. I know there's columnists other places. I don't know whether that's just a temporary allocation of resources. With the Buffalo News sale, probably everything's up for grabs in the near future. We don't know how the new owners are going to look at that picture, but I know I miss it.
Okay. I would agree with that. How about advice to the consumer, the consumer of sports journalism? Do you have any advice for him, something to help guide them through? I mean, everybody's active. Everybody consumes. We consume at unbelievable rates now, even dinosaurs like me. What about that?
Boy, I subscribe to the Buffalo News. I just started subscribing to The Athletic. That's behind a payroll, a wall, but there's a lot of good things there and a lot of writers that I'm very familiar with and enjoy their work. It's funny how I get up every morning and it takes me half an hour to go through my Twitter feed. And I'm relatively selective on who I get information from, what I get information from, what sources I get. And that's probably not going away. But you have to – I try to avoid the rumor monger sites and the Barstool Sports sites that try to be a little more edgy or whatever. I try to stick to the more traditional ways. And you can do that now on Twitter and get links to stories from – what you would call the top sources in the field, and that's the way I do it. I don't know if I'm pretentious enough to tell everyone to follow my example, but it's worked for me and just trying to keep up. And there's a lot of good work out there being done by a lot of different people.
Where do you see this all going? You got any idea? Want to make a prediction? 5 years, 10 years, 1 year, a month?
I used to say when phones got popular at the news that the newspaper industry as a whole had no idea where it was going. They just didn't know how to cope with it, and no one did really. I mean, the New York Times and Wall Street Journal have their niches and will probably always be there, but pretty clearly printed newspapers are dying. I used to say ad nauseum that in the old days, railroads thought they were in the railroad business. They should have thought they were in the transportation business. We should be flying New York Central and the Pennsylvania Airlines to this day.
Right.
While the newspapers thought they were in the newspaper business, they were really in the information business, and they've been forced to make that adjustment. But what happens when the print edition is no longer viable economically? That's probably going to be the big test coming forward, and you see newspaper chains going bankrupt. You see small papers closing. USA Today is going to stop its print edition soon. That's the scary part. What sort of adjustments will have to be made when most newspapers are memories and not just so that old copies can line bird cages across America. The other interesting part to me is gambling, which is clearly coming thanks to the Supreme Court rule. The moral issues have clearly gone away on that or have been put aside for the moment. Teams are now welcoming the idea of trying to get money out of this with open arms. Even the National Lacrosse League has a deal with an MGM casino as the official casino of the league or something like that. I think that's going to change sports and coverage in sports in a lot of way. Now, as for the sports itself, I would think the level of cynicism is going to go up dramatically. When an official makes a call against the home team, before it was just a bad call and you're upset. Now it might be taking money out of your pocket. And I would think there's going to be a lot more anger out there, and it's going to take some adjustment from everybody to try to handle that. Now, I've been to Europe a few times over the years and picked up sports sections, at least the ones I could read, and some of it looks like the Wall Street Journal stock tables. It's all betting. and what the odds are and what it paid or whatever. And I don't know how much of a share of attention that's going to get down the road. But frankly, if I was 12 now and looking at that sort of world where the financial implications equaled or overwhelmed just the game implications in the sports structure, I'm not sure if I'd take to sports as much as I did. And that scares me a little bit. I'm not sure if they know what they're getting into with this whole area, and I don't think anyone does. You've heard the line from people for the past several years on why they gamble on a specific football game between Atlanta and San Francisco on a Sunday afternoon. Well, I was watching it, and I wanted to make it interesting. Well, to me, if the game's not interesting enough to capture my attention, I won't watch it.
Right.
I'll go read a book or something. But there's obviously an audience for people who want that and need that to make sports part of their lives. And it's going to be one of those unforeseen circumstances that always happens with major changes.
You know, that'd be a great place to end this conversation. But I don't want to end it without just a couple of other thoughts about your time covering sports. Do you have a favorite story? Do you have a favorite moment? Something that you, when you think about your time covering sports, I mean, obviously there's more and there's more to come with Buffalo Sports Page, but do you have, is there something that, that stands out? Wow, I stumped Bud Bailey.
Yeah.
I never thought I could do that one.
I think I've done a lot of things that were totally unexpected. And maybe if I look back on my career at this point, I'd like to think that I have experienced a lot and seen what goes on inside and outside. And it's almost the totality of things I've covered, from hosting a talk show to doing baseball play-by-play to working with a sports team and seeing how it works, and sitting in the general manager's room when Jerry Meehan called up one of the Sabres and say, you know, "Hi, Kevin, I traded you." The little things like that and the backstories you hear, it's an interesting little world, and I'm always happy when I've written a story of any kind that either puts a smile on a person's face or makes them think in a different way or tells them something they didn't know. And that's probably, but there's probably a, if there's a line in my career, it's trying to experience all those things and pass them on. And the, part of that is I've written three local books, 12 in all, and that's also part of the experience of learning things about Buffalo's past and passing it along and keeping up to date, keeping fans up to date on what happened from yesteryear.
And you did mention that you did play-by-play, and you've been kind enough to share some audio with me. What can you tell me about play-by-play?
I was not good at it.
Join the club.
Yeah, it is very, very difficult. And the biggest problem I had, of course, was, like everyone, I was always self-conscious. And I did not have the type of voice that sounded older than 12 years old when I got excited. And I admire the people that can do that, because you have to think all the time, and what has to come out of your mouth is just perfect, and it's very difficult. I'm always fond of saying it's easy to sit back and be a critic for a newspaper or whatever and criticize the announcers. And if they make a mistake in the story, they have a delete button. They have editors reading it over that call them up and ask questions. The announcers don't get that. And to come up with perfect phrasing and dramatic phrasing and be good enough and to reach the status of local legend like, say, Van Miller and Rick Jannaret does, I have tons of admiration for those people. It's fun. It was fun to try it, but I clearly didn't have the right stuff to do that particular job, and I think my thoughtful approach, if that's a better word, was a little more of a fit for the newspaper business or the print business, I guess now since I'm writing on a computer screen that's somewhere in the atmosphere.
And the game that you had, it was from 1985, so it's at War Memorial Stadium.
Yes, it was. It's certainly funny how things worked out. The Bisons came in 1979 back to the Eastern League, and WEBR had the rights for, I think, 79 to 81 and 84 or 5. And we did weekend home games. And I did the middle three innings on Sunday. We had Greg Lucas and Bill Rosinski and Sam Anson were the main play-by-play guys, and I'd do analysis in the odd innings and then the middle three ones. And it was fun. It was kind of spooky because War Memorial Stadium was a fun house to play baseball in.
Bud Bailey, I appreciate your time. Thanks very much.
It was fun. Thank you so much for inviting me.